Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. From wars to censorship to cultural issues, you're with Mark Morano and Unleashed on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, today we're going to dive into this massive bridge collapse in Baltimore, in the United States, Baltimore, Maryland. It was dramatic footage. I don't really recall anything like this in my lifetime. This is a bridge I've used many times. Baltimore is only about an hour and 20 minutes from where I live, and I've gone many times, whether it's the New Jersey beaches or New York City or Philadelphia. Everyone, you end up using this bridge. It's part of the Baltimore Beltway. What's most disturbing about this bridge collapse, it was hit by a ship underneath it, a cargo-containing ship registered in Singapore, I believe, with a Danish crew, is that a modern infrastructure bridge, which was just given the okay of soundness, I think 2 years ago, it was, you know, thumbs up, could collapse because a boat hits it, which could happen, it's seemingly at any random moment of any day by accident. And of course, you know, intentionally, and a bridge collapses as though it's a kid's project in his basement. Shocking stuff. All right, we'll start our coverage. This is clip one. The Baltimore bridge collapse. We'll set this up. I just wanted to show you that's what we're talking about. I'm going to show you a lot leading up to that. I'm going to go to the CBC, the Canadian broadcast, did a great coverage of this, and you can watch about a minute or maybe almost 2 minutes of this clip here, because this is important. What you just saw there was a major bridge that, by the way, miraculously, and I'll get to that a little later, they were able to save the lives under this of just random people driving over, because they radioed in and the police, I still can't believe this, were able to shut off the bridge from oncoming traffic on the major highways because of this boat was out of control and about to hit. It's truly one of the most remarkable aspects of this. As they say, 30,000 cars a day drive over just this bridge. This could have been phenomenal, like thousands dead within a second at the wrong time of the day. I mean, there's many times these bridges can be backed up with beach traffic, other things. You could have bumper to bumper both ways. I mean, you could have casualties approaching, you know, who knows, 5,000, 10,000 people, vehicles, and not vehicles, people, because you could have vans and buses and all sorts of max human capacity. This is a major thoroughway for all the travel. Again, church groups, casinos. It goes, takes you off to Atlantic City. This takes you, even school field trips. You could have had mass casualties. As it is, I believe only 6 people died, and they were all construction workers on the bridge. 2 were rescued from the water. The other 4, I may have the number off slightly because it keeps changing, but either 4 or 6 that they couldn't find, they never even found the body. It's not like they found a single body that I'm aware of as we tape this. Okay, here's a CBC. I'll get to why this is an important story, because it deals with national security, it deals with infrastructure, it deals with conspiracy theories, and I'm not necessarily backing any of the more interesting theories, which I'll present a couple here, but let's go. This is the Canadian broadcast. Great coverage of this catastrophic Baltimore bridge collapse, clip 2.
The search grew more desperate, more urgent with every passing minute. Crews scouring a remarkable wreckage site of twisted metal and debris. After hours on the water with no signs of life, authorities confirmed the worst case scenario.
At this point, we do not believe that we're going to find any of these individuals still alive.
The terrifying incident caught on camera. See that massive cargo ship on the left side of your screen? That's the Dally. It loses power. All of the lights go out. The crew knew something was terribly wrong, sending out a mayday call.
Hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching. It just lost their steering.
At this point, the out-of-control ship is moving at about 8 knots, or 15 kilometers per hour. A plume of smoke can be seen in the moments just before it collided with the bridge's support structure. There's no sound on this recording to capture the chaos that followed. At least 8 people were on the bridge, construction workers doing routine maintenance. Only 2 were rescued. The other 6 are now presumed dead. There would have been more drivers had the ship's crew not called for help, giving police time to close the bridge.
There was a Mayday who literally, by being able to stop cars from coming over the bridge, these people are heroes. They saved lives last night.
The federal government will pay to rebuild the bridge and get the port reopened as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so that was the Canadian broadcast. And by the way, as quickly as possible to rebuild the bridge could be 6 months, more, a year. This is dealing with a major waterway, a river there in Baltimore. This is the Francis Scott Key Bridge. That is going to require deep pilings. Who knows? They might, you know, as they say, if Donald Trump, you know, maybe if he were in the private world, not running in politics right now and distracted, he could contract it out and build it in record time. That's what he always tried as a businessman. He always tried to brag. That was his thing. But what I find also interesting about this is the first responders sprang into action, shutting down the traffic on this 4-lane Francis Scott Key Bridge just before this 95,000 gross ton ship plowed into the bridge 1:30 in the morning, causing multiple sections, of course, to bow snap. C-13 dispatched the whole bridge. Someone just fell down. Someone shouted on the emergency channel. So the really good news out of this, I mean, 6 people died, of course, but the incredible part is once they lost steering, I guess they alerted the authorities, and I don't know if it was a toll booth, I have to think back, but the police, they were able to shut down the bridge before it collapsed and prevent all that oncoming traffic at 1:30 in the morning. Now, that'd probably be one of the lighter times a car is traveling. I've driven over that bridge late at night before in years. I mean, this is a bridge that's been there, I think it's, I can't remember the exact age of it right now. Let me see if I can find that. I believe it's like over 50 years old anyway, but actually maybe much older than that. And it just shows you that, you know, it actually worked, that first responder. Okay, so here's what the FBI had to say about this. They're first signed without knowing anything, without seeing it. This is now typical of post 9/11. There's no sign of terrorism. That's the first thing they say. This is the FBI, no sign of terrorism in the Baltimore bridge collapse, clip 4.
Hello, my name is Bill Del Bagno. I'm the special agent in charge of the Baltimore field office. First and foremost, I want to say that our hearts go out to everyone that is impacted by this tragedy, especially the victims and their families. On behalf of the FBI, I would like to say that we are with you, we're with Baltimore, and we're with the partners every step of the way. The FBI, on very first, looking at and assessing this matter from an investigative standpoint, I want to be clear that there is no specific or credible information to suggest that there are ties to terrorism in this incident. The FBI has been part of this response from the beginning. We came within 1 hour to the command post and quickly lashed up with our very strong partners all along the way. We will bring whatever resources that the FBI has to bear. We've already brought our crisis response, our victim services, and just recently, our underwater search evidence recovery teams are on site. And we will continue to provide all those resources as long as it takes. And as the investigation goes on, we will take it to its logical conclusion along with our partners. To the people of Baltimore, to the public, I ask you to be patient as we go through this and as information becomes available to us. And lastly, I want to say thank you. Thank you to our partners. Thank you to everyone who in the FBI and counts on the FBI. We will always bring what we need to the people of Baltimore, and we are with you.
Okay, that's like a pep rally. And it's interesting how every time something happens, there's no sign of terrorism. It's boilerplate. Kind of like, stay calm, everything's under control, please disperse, just the police, you know, when there's no necessarily any resemblance to reality. I'm not saying there is any evidence of terrorism. There has been on how shall we say, Twitter or X, a lot of theories growing up. One of them is, how can a ship without power execute a 90-degree turn toward the bridge support? And there's lots of questions about, yeah, they dropped anchor, but then of course the ship was so heavy, the anchor wouldn't slow it down. You wouldn't even really make that much of a difference given the short span of distance. This is clip three. People asking, after it loses power, how does it suddenly turn toward the bridge? Again, I'm not endorsing this. I'm just trying to give you an idea of the scope of what's out here. I don't necessarily trust the government response either. Clip three. Up a little bit here, and you see the ship coming in. I just want you to focus on, just so we know exactly what happened. There's the lights went out. Now the lights go back on. You see a plume of black smoke on top of the ship. And that's, of course, headed right into the support. You can see it now turning sharply into the support, and the lights go out again. Now, again, it could have been river currents. It could have just been the way, you know, they're panicking, the whole, all the hydraulics, the steering, electricity, everything went off instantly. And you see the cars, look at this right now, that's going right into the support. You see, it looks like an 18-wheeler driving right over top. It's amazing. Yeah, again, and it looks like that 18-wheeler we saw, if you're looking at the bridge, was the last car to go over. I don't see, and then there it is. So that 18-wheeler probably made it within 10 seconds of their life, the 18-wheeler truck. And there it goes, completely down. It's just really some of the most dramatic footage. And of course, the fact that I've driven over it many times makes it even more dramatic on that part. So again, I'm not, you know, this was footage, these are people putting out, asking these questions. Interestingly enough, former 60 Minutes correspondent, Lara Logan, investigative journalist now, she's independent. She left 60 Minutes, just part of the red-pilled liberal group. She's now been seriously doing some great work. She has now wondering why government officials are so quick to dismiss the terrorism. I just showed you the FBI. And she thinks there might be more to it. I just want to emphasize again, I am not endorsing this, but I think it's very interesting. She has a lot of credibility, former 60 Minutes. Not that 60 Minutes had a lot of credibility, but she's a really first-rate journalist. Let's hear what she has to say. This is clip five. Investigative journalist Lara Logan isn't buying the government's explanation thus far.
Well, I have a better question for you, Steve. Why are you coming to the mic telling the country that it's not terrorism when your own intelligence agencies are telling you it is? And I know they are, because I didn't make this up. These are not my words, right? I'm talking to people who are on the inside, some who are on active duty, some who are retired, and everyone, literally, from critical infrastructure in Department of Homeland Security to the intelligence agencies, they know there's no other, this is a cyber attack on a critical infrastructure corridor for the United States. This is, you know, for those people who think this is just a river, this is in Baltimore, what does this matter? You don't know anything about what you're talking about. This, the I-94 corridor on the eastern seaboard, is literally what connects the north and south. And when I talk about hazardous materials, right, this is a brilliant, well-planned strategic attack on one of the most important supply chains in the United States of America. The only other one is in the western side in California. That's the only one that's busier. And what you have done is you now have shut it down. And when I talk about hazardous materials, what are we talking about here? This is refined fuels, right? This is propane gas. This is diesel. This is fuel. This is flammable materials. This is oversized loads, nitrogen, chemicals. Everything that you need for your economy to move has literally just been shut down for 4 to 5 years.
Wow. She makes a compelling case that this isn't your run-of-the-mill, just little, you know, bridge collapse. Not that there's anything that's run-of-the-mill. Interestingly enough, there were many bridge collapses. It's usually one a decade somewhere in the United States. And I remember we had one in Minnesota, and it was actually Joe Rome, who was a climate activist at the time. I haven't seen him name lately. He blamed it on global warming, and I'm sure that's going to come. But just to give you an idea of the depth of, I don't want to call them conspiracy theories, but if this pans out, this is on Twitter as well. Concerned Citizen is promoting this out. Baltimore Bridge collapse. Angela Chow, they show this picture, and I can't verify this. Again, I'm sort of just having a town hall with you, the viewer. I'm not presenting this. I'm not saying this is fact. Angela Chow is the CEO of the shipping company that owned the cargo vessel responsible for the Baltimore Bridge collapse. Last month, she drowned in her vehicle. She's dead. She was allegedly drunk and backed her car into a pond. She's also, it says here, she's also sister-in-law of Republican Senator Mitch McConnell. Don't know if that's true. They're calling this, is this a crazy coincidence? Is this further? So, you know, and then other people here are trying to back this theory up. Anyway, there's going to be all sorts of wild things. I am not attaching myself to any of those things. I don't know what happened here. My number one point when I see something, and I worked in the United States Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. So we dealt with infrastructure, trains, planes, automobiles, way beyond the John Candy and Steve Martin film. We actually dealt with the organization and the planning and the funding and the infrastructure projects, allocating resources. We had hearings on infrastructure. I just can't believe in the year 2024, post 9/11 by what, 23 years? Am I math right? I think it is. That we have bridges where a foreign registered from Singapore ship can just all of a sudden within seconds, I guess it was about a minute or 2 minutes, turn into a bridge support on a major artery in the United States, major city, and boom, just knock out a bridge, just like that. I just can't believe a bridge is that vulnerable. I can't believe that we don't have, I guess you'd call it barriers as a standard procedure, which I believe should come from this. I mean, this is like a how-to for terrorists around the world, if this isn't terrorism or any kind of conspiracy, of how to take down massive major bridges in America. Hey, just get a ship, foreign registry, and just ram it into one of the supports, and the thing will come down like Tinker Toy. That's frightening. That's wrong. At my website, Climate Depot today, Baltimore Bridge collapse will block coal exports from the U.S. second largest coal exporting port. The ramifications of this supply line, energy, traffic, economic, are going to just be felt forever. I mean, not forever, but you know, potentially for years here. And I don't know what to say. You know, I don't want to be attached to any of these theories, including Lara Logan's and including any of these other things out there. But they better be crystal clear and transparent. And I mean they, meaning the government, the FBI specifically, the Biden administration, Pete Buttigieg, our transportation secretary. Also, the funny thing, not funny thing, but Joe Biden, took him, let me see if I have the number, how many days to visit the East Palestine train wreck. Let's see, it took Biden 378 days, over a year to finally go to that train wreck. That was the one in Ohio about 2 years ago where they literally train crashed toxic chemicals. And they said, how do we clean this up? Well, it's easier just to burn it. So instead of dealing with a localized toxic hazard that was leaching into groundwater and going into streams, instead, they decided to put it on fire and let's send it into the atmosphere. And then, of course, the air quality went to crap. One of the insane, most rash decisions without thinking, that's something that required some serious thought. That was nuts what they did there. There's other ways you can contain that. And that's part of what I worked in the Environment Public Works. We dealt with EPA and hazardous waste containment. So just again, just ask yourself that question. How was the railroad company able to make these with local officials? Just boom, well, we'll do this. It's almost like in a movie. Well, let's just try this. No, this is something you need to think about because you turn one problem into many. And then, of course, they had to evacuate the town because it got through all the air and there was a plume of toxic chemicals, I mean, in the air, in addition to the ground, in addition to the waterways, in addition to all the farms and the livestock and the animals and the fish that were affected and fish were affected years later. So Biden, will he show up? I believe Pete Buttigieg, knowing all the pressure, showed up the same day, went out to Baltimore, which isn't that big of a deal coming from D.C. It's probably a 45-minute drive or so, although who knows, given that a major bridge is down. Anyway, this is the world upon which we live in 2024, and we do need, I hate to just be one of those people like, oh, something bad happened. We need new regulations. We don't need regulations, but we do need, I guess the regulations, we do need a way to say, hey, you can't just ram any random foreign vessel into a ship, a bridge support, and have it come down within 2 minutes. Can't ever have that happen again. I mean, that's nuts. People say this shouldn't happen ever, ever. I mean, that's what's so incredible. This is not something, and many structural engineers just can't believe you would want some kind of buffer around every critical bridge support. And you would have, you kind of like the way they test the 5-mile-an-hour car bumpers are supposed to withstand it so they don't get damaged at certain speeds. You know, whatever the perimeter is for these structural supports, they probably need to triple them and do a lot of tests, you know, in the engineering phase before they build it. So I don't know. Fascinating stuff. All right. A couple other quick stories here. Study came out, and this is my lead story at Climate Depot. The era of climate inflation is here. Ba-doop bang. Biden isn't responsible for inflation. Climate change is. And I would just go beyond Biden. I mean, Trump was a big spender. Obama was a big spender. George W. Bush was a massive spender as well. Bill Clinton wasn't. And George H.W. Bush was with the war. Ronald Reagan was for the time. You know, the big mistake Ronald Reagan made was he cut taxes and agreed to promised cuts in the budget. Oh, we'll go along with this one. He agreed to this tax increase, a one-time tax increase to sort of offset, but at the same time, budget cuts would come later. The tax increase came immediately for Reagan's first term. He also cut taxes, but this tax increase he agreed to, the budget cuts never arrived. Anyway, it's really been supercharged since COVID, and there was the tail end of Trump, the spending. And now you have Biden doing all this. And there's an actual study out claiming it's not any presidents or spending or modern monetary theory or a massive federal debt. It's all about the idea of climate change is causing it. So let's take a look at this. The scoop, the headline, this is from Axios, the era of climate inflation is here. It may be time to add climate change as a list of factors that likely worsen inflation, a new study finds. The data suggests climate change is ripping through entire economies instead of affecting the availability or price of particular goods. Now, don't dispute this. Unless you have a PhD in climatology, you have no business disputing this. You have to trust the science. This study blaming climate change for inflation was published in a peer-reviewed journal, or PAL-reviewed, actually it's peer-reviewed, by their pals, journal Communications, Earth and Environment. And the study shows increasing global average temperatures, more intense frequent heat waves and other factors are already driving up the prices of food and other goods worldwide. These trends are likely to worsen. Now, first of all, as I've said many times in this program, food pricing is about rationing. The climate policies are all about rationing. Let's go after nitrogen. Let's go after high-yield agriculture. Let's go after plentiful food. Let's go after animal agriculture. Let's ration meat eating. Policies like that are what drive up food prices. Also, lockdowns, supply chain disruptions, and even bridge collapses. But not climate change! And there is no, if you look back at for instance, the United States, the 1930s heat wave index is about 10 times hotter than anything we're experiencing now. 75% of all state temperature records were broken before the 1950s in the US. It was much hotter in the past, 100 years ago, 90 years ago. And the idea that, of course, increasing storms, we've already gone through that, not happening. And this is what they're trying to blame on climate change. It's embarrassing. It's just something that I don't know what to say. This is what they do all the time. It's just so silly. Also, one other story here. Time Magazine. Okay. Time Magazine has their Earth Day special out. And I call my headline at Climate Depot, Stop the Presses. Time Magazine reveals the 2024 Earth Awardees. Are you ready for the Earth Awards? Guess who got the award? Are you ready? Drum roll, please. John Kerry and Jane Fonda. The magazine praises leaders working to save the planet. And there you have it. We have Time Magazine giving John Kerry yet another award, more money, more everything. So anyway, when we come back, we have to take a break. Tiffany Meyer and Kevin Sorbo, my old pal from the film Climate Hustle 2, will be joining me. And they are the film hosts. They are in the new movie and producing the new movie, Hollywood Takeover, China's Control in the Film Industry. And if you know anything, even the NBA, Apple, China is really influential in national sporting, Hollywood. What's going on? Are they paying people? We're going to have an in-depth discussion about that. The Hollywood Takeover film coming up next. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right. Well, joining the program now is Tiffany Meyer, film host and investigative reporter for the new film available for you to watch already, Hollywood Takeover, China's Control in the Film Industry. And you can go to hollywoodtakeover.com to find out how to watch it. It'll be on Epic TV. Tiffany is also the host of NTD's China in Focus program. Also joining us is my friend Kevin Sorbo. He's a cast member in the Hollywood Takeover, China's Control in the Film Industry. You'll know him as the Hercules, the legend, Legendary Journeys, a Hercules actor. He's also the star of Climate Hustle 2, which was released in 2020. Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Tiffany, for joining the program today.
Good to be here, sir.
It's good to be with you.
My first reaction when you have a movie that you guys are talking about here, Hollywood Takeover, China's Control in the Film Industry, is, what is going on? I mean, we already have Chinese takeover, the World Health Organization. They're controlling public health to the point where World Health Organization's officials said, if you want to know how to handle a virus, copy China. And then the whole world locked down in the most tyrannical faction against everything. You also have China, Politico magazine, worried about a Chinese agricultural land monopoly in the United States, as they're one of the single largest farmland owners next to Bill Gates in the United States. You also have China owning pork processing plants, China gutting our industrial base. You have all these major corporations from Apple to NBA all praising China, saying our values align. You have leaders like Justin Trudeau saying he admires China's basic dictatorship. So my question is, not to go too long here, how in the world did Hollywood get caught up in all that? And how is China so powerful that they could influence all these facets of our life? What's going on? Let's start with your movie. What's it about, and how did they influence Hollywood? I guess we'll start with Tiffany.
Well, yes, I think all of that goes back to money. Movies especially cost a lot to make. And so after the 2008 Beijing Olympics, suddenly everyone looked at China, was like, oh, look, here's a growing power, right? It looks great. What fantastic. No one covered the human rights abuses that are happening around the Olympics. But anyway, so everyone saw that. Meanwhile, there was the U.S. financial crisis as well, right? So many companies are like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? It looks like China is the place to be. And so, you know, capitalist open markets, everything's going to be great. We're going to go in there, you know, make them more democratic, more liberal. But then that wasn't China's goal or communist China's goal. So then what we found out was with so many other things, right, even with the World Trade Organization, now you see that the free markets are less free. And the same thing happened with Hollywood. I'm sure Kevin can speak to that. But like what you saw is this opening up in the beginning. Maybe there would be two versions of movies, one for the China market and one for the rest of the world. But eventually China was like, no, our version has to be the one that the world sees. And then studios are like, oh my gosh, there's so much money to be made there. What does it matter if my one movie does this? But then you step back and you see that through over the years, all the studios started doing that to the point that you even had Top Gun, when it was initially going to come out, have a trailer with the two patches, the iconic flight jacket, missing the Japanese and Taiwanese flags because the Chinese tech giant Tencent was funding part of the film because they're like, this is going to be such an expensive film to make. There was so much international backlash, especially from Hong Kong human rights activist groups being like, how could you do this? This is probably the most patriotic film you could think of, to the point that also pandemic hit, studios had time to change things. Top Gun reversed course. So by the time it released, the flags were back. Tencent backed out, and that film passed $1 billion without the China market. So you're seeing that change. But both, so basically, it was just like money. What does it matter? You know, the ideals of freedom are going to convince other parties. But then what we found out in this documentary and through the process of making it was it goes back to fundamentally what the Communist Party stands for. They see the arts as actually a tool, as a weapon for their goals of hegemony, of taking over the free world. And so then that influence and infiltrated into Hollywood. So then throughout the years, people like Kevin Sorbo were pushed out.
Yeah, well, Kevin, you and your wife, Sam, are featured in the documentary. Why did you decide to do that? And have you seen the Chinese influence? And how have you seen Hollywood change in your decades of work history there? Is it something you don't recognize, or was it always sort of this way, willing to be bought out by the highest bidder and spew this kind of propaganda?
No, I think it's really been the last 10, 12 years that you're really starting to rear its ugly head and seeing more and more of it. I think there was sort of a quiet underground movement. And by the way, speaking to Tiffany first, was the one to talk to. She was the brainchild behind this. Yeah. She did amazing. She produced it, directed it, kept everything together, was certainly involved in the editing of it, and it's a fantastic documentary, and it shows what's actually going on in that country. Look, China rules its people in the strong hand of communism, evil of communism, but the government is certainly capitalistic. They love making money, and I suppose most of America's debt is held by China. And what do we let them do? Well, we let them take the money that we had to give them, that they're coming back here, and like you said, they're buying up all our land. They have a huge influence what's going on in movies and television. They own all the AMC theaters. And they want to paint China as an amazing place, the best place to be. I mean, a perfect example is what they have on TikTok. TikTok here in America, they want to let people go rampant with the craziness of, you see, you know, girls jiggling around and they're 16 years old, or you see guys dressed up as women, and they sit there and endorse it. And all of a sudden, these people are making more money. So other people here in the States, once again, as Tiffany mentioned, it's all about greed, no matter what it really comes down to. And so they're endorsing that. And so people are copying that to make money. But in China, their TikTok is completely different. There's a completely viewpoint of what they're seeing. And it's a much more positive reinforcement within the Chinese government towards its people. Yet they still rule them communism, right? The hypocrisy is there. It's just unbelievable. Ricky Gervais said it best when he hosted the Golden Globes for like the fourth time, and he was shocked they brought him back in. And he called all the A-list directors, producers, actors in the front three rows saying, you guys are a bunch of whores. If ISIS came up with a film fund, you'd be the first to sign up. And if China has 1.5 billion customers, and even if they only pay a buck a ticket, they're going to make a lot of money there. So they're not going to back away from it. But the story behind it, my wife is in this as well. The biggest story, what Tiffany put together with, was Chris Fenton. Because Chris has done massively huge movies, Iron Man, etc. He finally woke up to the fact of what he's doing. And his wife said, are you okay with what you're doing? And it made him sort of think back. And he said, this is crazy what we're doing, because we're selling out America to China. And that's exactly what this documentary shows. It's a great documentary. I got to pop it up there right there. It shows a little postcard of it right there. Tiffany's front and center. And I'm sitting there with my golf cap on, of course. But it was really cool to see it. And I love the fact that we had the screening in Beverly Hills, right in the heart of it, 3 days, 4 days just before the Oscars. I thought it was brilliant marketing.
All right. Well, Tiffany, Chris Fenton, the former Hollywood executive, what has the reaction been for him speaking out among his colleagues, saying, hey, you guys are basically Chinese propagandists taking their money? Is he persona non grata in Hollywood now?
I think you're seeing a shift in a way. Also, you know, since the pandemic, there's so many streaming services, the rise of the independent film studios like Angel Studios, Sound of Freedom. So I think you're seeing that shift where people are like, wait, you know, even if I do everything like Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Eternals, these were custom made for the China market. Neither of those Marvel films entered the China market, you know, because the Simu Liu, the lead actor in Shang-Chi, had said something slightly negative about the communist regime, about what his parents endured under communism. And Chloe Zhao, the director of Eternals, way back when, I think in 2017, had said something slightly negative. So then studios are like, hold up. Wait, if that is custom made for that side of the world and doesn't even get in, what does that say to us? So I think you're already seeing that shift. And then someone like Chris Fenton coming out, a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, you know, that vibes with what I experience and stuff. And then since the release of this documentary, I've actually had a lot of people reach out and say, hey, if you do a part two, I'll speak to you for like 17 hours. I have 20 years of dirt on the industry. So mostly it's been really positive. I can't speak for him. I don't know if he's gotten death threats. I don't think so. But yeah, I think mostly it's been a positive response.
And Kevin, Hollywood has changed. I mean, 30, 40 years ago, you know, they could say, you're never working this town again, but they really don't have the power to do that. Because as Tiffany said, there's the rise of these independent studios. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Is that your experience as well, that there's so many other outlets that there isn't that singular control that Hollywood used to have?
Oh, no question. Because I've always been vocal, not in a hateful or angry way, but I post on the internet and Facebook and all that. And my agent and manager called me a dozen years ago and said, we can't work with you anymore. We're not going to be able to get you work because you are openly conservative and Christian. And I laugh at it because Hollywood always screams about tolerance and freedom of speech, but they're hypocrites, as you know. It's a one-way street with them, just like it is in Washington, D.C. So thank God for all everything that's going on in the independent world. I formed Sorbo Studios. People go to sorbostudios.com, all kinds of information there. And a lot of other independent studios and producers and directors came to me. And I've shot over 50 movies in the last dozen years since Hollywood booted me up. Am I making the kind of money I made in Hercules or Andromeda or the bigger movies I was doing prior to getting booted up? No, but I'm telling you what, I'm doing movies that I want to be part of, because these are movies Hollywood used to do. The things I'm doing, love, hope, redemption, laughter, things are movies that Hollywood used to do. Look, I worked with, you know, you're like a brilliant mind in the whole climate change thing, which I call weather, just like you do. And we did Climate Hustle 2, and Amazon wouldn't even put it on. What is this censoring going on? Why can't we, you know, why is it only Al Gore and Inconvenient Truth? Why don't we show, you know, junior high school kids both sides, both movies? Let them make up their own mind. But they don't want to do that. There's this total control over education and indoctrination going on. And Walt Disney said back in the 1950s, movies and television will influence our youth. Well, hello, look at the way Hollywood's doing it and their woke craziness. But at least people woke up to Disney. Disney's looking at well over $1 billion loss. So the kind of documentaries that I've been doing over the last 10 years, working with you and other people and working now with Tiffany, I'm seeing, I love what she's doing. I mean, she's brave to stand up to this and show the reality of what's happening in our country right now. And I hope to God that people will look at this documentary, because it's a very important one to look at.
Yeah, by the way, on Climate Hustle 2, we had our first film, Climate Hustle, that had been on Amazon Prime on demand for four years plus. And it wasn't until we submitted your film with you, Kevin Sorbo, Climate Hustle 2, that Amazon came back and said, oh, this doesn't meet our community standards or our content standards. And then they literally went back and immediately after we requested Climate Hustle 2 be added, they deleted Climate Hustle 1 and stopped caring. It's almost like they had overlooked it, and we reminded them, so they got rid of it by then. Because of course, the whole the whole censorship thing between 2016.
That's what I said. They'll get in bed with the communist country, but they want America to have freedom of speech. I mean, we're seeing it played out more and more in the world right now. We got a battle on our hands, and we got to fight back. Fear is their greatest weapon. They love using fear to control people's lives. There are so many sheep out there, and we need to be more lions like what you guys are doing.
Well, Kevin, let me ask you this, Kevin. So many people have said, and I remember hearing this when I was young, you know, if we reach out to them, if we work with them, and you know, that free flow of information to China, we need all these deals. This is how they justified the China gutting industrial base. China will become more like us. Has that panned out for people who say, of course we take Chinese money, of course we work with them, because we're trying to open up China? There's people that justify this kind of behavior by saying it's going to make China more like the free West. Or is the free West, the once free West, becoming more like China? How do you see it?
I think China looks at a lot of Americans as useful idiots, just like Lenin did back in the Bolshevik Revolution. So, no, I think that it's not changing at all. They are the snake that are eating the snake, and the Democrat Party in this country and the left party, they are the snake that keeps eating their own tail. So, you know, we got a battle on our hands, and people got to stand up and fight and not let people, you know, control them with fear. And we got a, you know, we got an election coming up right now. And I've been saying for the last 3 years, where are the Republicans not fighting back on mail-in voting? We can't have mail-in voting. There'll never be an honest election in this country. Continue with mail-in voting.
Exactly, especially those five or six key swing states would be finished. All right,
that's insane.
So, Tiffany, when you talk to Hollywood and in the film, I mean, they could try to justify it as, well, we're trying, you know, we want these deals with China. This has been the long thing. China will become more like the West. What's your view on that? Or has the West become more like China the more we get entangled with them? Certainly following them on COVID, certainly adopting our own social credit system. But what's your view on that?
Yes, I think fundamentally it comes down to understanding what the Communist Party is, right? So the Communist Party actually fears its own people, the Chinese people, waking up and realizing that it's an illegitimate governing power. So fundamentally understanding that then explains what they do, as Kevin was mentioning earlier, right? The Communist Party controls its population and the information they get. And then through Hollywood and other institutions, it now controls the way the world views it. So it doesn't matter how much the West or freedom-loving countries are like, we're just going to engage, we're just going to be friendlier. That's not how they play, right? So it's like, it doesn't matter what you do, they're not changing what they are, as in the people in power in communist China. And until people realize that, it's like, that's not working. Instead, what we're seeing is all the things we just laid out, right? The COVID response, the free markets becoming less free, our education is being infiltrated, our border, all these different areas. So instead, it's like, even people like Chris Fenton in the film, he was one of those aspirational people who was like, oh my gosh, we just have to do more trade. It's going to be fantastic. Whenever people were like, hey, you know, what are you doing? He was like, no, you don't understand. I'm right. Like, you know, this is going to be great for both countries. Everything's going to be good. And then one day he's like, wait a minute, you know, like, this is not the future I want my children to grow up in. And then he has that waking up moment. So it's one of those processes where it's like, many people, I think they just have that like hubris. They think they know better than the other side. They're like, no. Like, we just have to be nicer. You just saw a slew of CEOs over there right now, actually getting a dinner with Xi Jinping, the head of Communist China, to create more business, right? So then you have major CEOs being like, oh my gosh, I love their governing system. The people are so great because everything is paraded out to them. We even saw when Xi Jinping visited San Francisco for APEC, right? Suddenly the homeless disappeared off the streets for 3 days.
Right.
So it's like, that's what they're seeing. And it's this whitewashing, if you will, especially we saw with Disney and the live action Mulan. They were literally filming parts in Xinjiang, where the U.S. and European countries are saying genocide is being committed against the Uyghurs. And then all the credits were thanking the Xinjiang government officials who are committing those heinous acts. So it's gone to that point where people, I think to Kevin's point, right, have to think about, what do they stand for? What's the country they want? And if we keep down this road, we are becoming more and more like communist China, to the point that those people who survived the Cultural Revolution in China are looking out at the cancel culture, all these different ideologies being pushed in America and saying, wait, this is what led to the Cultural Revolution in China. Why aren't people realizing that if America falls as that beacon on the hill, there is no other place for people to go?
Yes. Mark, I got to tell you, if you want to talk about China changing, if we're going to be able to influence in China, as Tiffany just said, there's just no way it's going to happen. Take the climate issue, where we're spending trillions of dollars to worry about one degree of operation. Do you think China and India give a crap and are doing anything with their industry and what they're putting into the atmosphere? And you got more scientists, as you know, that say we need more carbon out there. We're at a level that is crazy and dangerous. So China's not going to change, and we're not going to change China. And we think we're going to change the Middle East. How many trillions of dollars do we spend fighting a war for 20 years and nothing has changed over there at all? It's insane what we're doing. And it all comes down to money, because I guarantee a lot of people in America made a lot of money on that war for 20 years.
Yeah, and you're right about China and climate. It was Donald Trump, was it his 2013 tweet, which literally said the whole climate scare is based on empowering China and making them the world's essentially the economic powerhouse. That was probably the most visionary, truthful tweet ever in the history of all tweets, was Donald Trump's tweet, because that's exactly encapsulated. All right, we take a quick break. We're talking with Timothy Meyer, the film host, investigative reporter for Hollywood Takeover, China's Control in the Film Industry. And we're talking to actor Kevin Sorbo, who appears in the film. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll come right back and wrap this up. Thank you very much. Stay tuned.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
From economics to the woke agenda, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, we're continuing our discussion with Kevin Sorbo, the actor, and Tiffany Meyer, the host of Hollywood Takeover, China's Control in the Film Industry. It's available on HollywoodTakeover.com and on EpicTV.com, if I've got that right, EpicTV.com. John Cena, the actor, I've the viral clip of him apologizing over and over to China. So this seems like it's gotten even beyond, because he had said something about Taiwan. This seems like it's gotten beyond the studio executives and the actors, and you know, a lot of other people get the message down the food chain in Hollywood. Can you give us a little insight about the John Cena incident where he had to apologize repeatedly for offending China?
Yeah, so if we look back in the day, right, Richard Gere was probably the biggest name in Hollywood. Does a film about Tibet, disappears from Hollywood. Well, I guess, you know, other actors saw that, decided not to do that. So now you have the opposite, which is John Cena. They want their movie in China. So what do? You apologize in Mandarin. But I mean, like, John Cena is a big guy, right? He's like what you think of as American, like this buff dude action hero. And then you see him basically on his knees to the Chinese Communist Party. That, like, think about that image, right? That is a perfect image of what this whole relationship has become. Everyone thinks of America as, like, not the big bully, but, you know, say the international police on the world stage. But instead, you see that now kowtowing to this side, which is probably the biggest tyrannical regime out there, for money. But then now there isn't even that much money to be made since the pandemic. So it's like this really weird dichotomy that you're seeing.
And Kevin, what do you think the solution to this problem is? How do we stop essentially the Chinese takeover of Hollywood? Is it just more independent studios, decentralized approach? Or what do you think is the best way to sort of, obviously exposing it, but what's the best way that we can actually correct this situation and stop this Chinese propaganda flow?
Well, you know, the independent movies I do would never show in China, because they got faith in there. They've got freedom in there. Can't show that. I've got a friend here who's trying to get in the PGA. He's a heck of a golfer. He's from China. He's a Christian. And he had to be underground. They escaped China and they were able to get out. But I mean, you look what they're doing now. I don't think anything's changed. I mean, Hollywood still wants to make their money, and they're looking at $1.5 billion. And you need more people like I don't know, to wake up. More people like what Chris did, what Chris Fenton did, and just fight back. But I don't know. I don't see the change. Look, we just had 33,000 on his last count I saw come across the border through San Diego. 33,000 Chinese. I got a friend who has a furniture business, does a lot of business over in China. He says to travel within China, you got all kinds of papers and OKs to move around. He said, how did 33,000 get out of the country and come so easily through Mexico to come into our country? And these are all military age guys. I mean, you see what's going on at the border. I mean, that's another whole issue we could spend a long time talking about. When Trump had 1.4 million over 4 years come across the border, and we got Uncle Joe Biden letting in 2.5-3 million every single year. I mean, it's absolutely insane what we're doing in America. And I think we're looking at, not to get off the subject completely, but I'm really concerned we're going to have a 9/11 on a mass scale here. We're going to have 30 cities at the same time on the same day. And the people, the Democrats will go, how did this happen? Well, it's insanity what we're doing. And it's insanity to bend over backwards to China, but that's what we're doing. And they own more and more of America right now. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's a scary time right now. And people got to buck up and try to have the balls to not to fight back.
All right. And Tiffany, what's your thought? What's the best way to reform this? Obviously, you believe exposing it with this new film, you know, Hollywood Takeover. But tell us what you think is the best way forward. Does there need to be laws? I mean, there's a lot of congressmen looking into limiting private ownership of American farmland. You have worry about China owning the pork plants, processing plants, monopolies. What can we do? Do you think is this something that would require either legislation, monopoly breaking up in Hollywood, or just disclosure? Would that be embarrassing enough for these studios of Chinese money?
I think it's a multi-pronged approach. First, I think you need awareness, right? People need to realize what's going on before you can take any actions. But then I think it's hard if we just sit back and wait for the government to wake up and act, because there is a lot of infiltration in the government as well, right? A lot of money to be made, whatever. You can talk about the green energy revolution. A lot of money to be made over there, right? That's also helping China. But I think ultimately it comes down to that local level. As Kevin is mentioning, right, this is an election year. You know, if you find this helpful, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your community. It really starts at that local level to then move up. If we actually want change, and that's what you've seen, there was this like Chinese plant that was set up in North Dakota close to the Grand Forks Air Force Base. Supposedly that's where their customers were, but there's only this one plant being set up. But because the local community did not want that there, it was cut. So, you know, there are things that can be done if people do raise their voice and say, hold up, this is still America and we want it to remain that way.
All right. And Kevin, I guess that we're down to our final minute and a half here. So what is your message then for people? Should there be a truth in financing disclosure for films? How do people know whether they're watching a movie, whether it's Chinese paid for propaganda or a film that does not feature that? Should there be a warning label of some kind? What can we do?
Warning label would be fun, but they would never do that. I just think that, you know, people need to pay a little more close attention to the movies they're watching, because if the messages come across that pro-communism, because of what Hollywood does, or for socialism, communism, which cracks me up because it is a capitalist business, is it not? So it's kind of interesting to see the only battle they have going on with that. So I don't know. To me, it just comes down to paying attention to the movies that your kids are watching and TV shows you're doing, what TikTok is doing to your kids and to this country. I'm not going to say we should get rid of TikTok, but I think there should be stricter sort of content laws or something to do with it, because there's some craziness out there. But I've always said the internet is wonderful, but at the same time, it's the Wild West. So people, I think, just got to be more diligent and pay attention to what's going on.
Thank you very much. All right, we're out of time. Tiffany Meyer, Hollywood Takeover, China's Control in the Film Industry, hollywoodtakeover.com. And Kevin Sorbo, thank you.